Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
This podcast is supported by Cartier. In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, Cartier shares testaments of love in all its forms from around the world. Please keep listening for today's love story later in this episode.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. In the beginning of a relationship, we walk in blissfully ignorant, with no knowledge of the skeletons that may lurk in a lover's closet. But the true test comes when the doors fly open and those skeletons rattle out. This week's essay by Carrie Sandburg takes us into the closet and back out again. Tony-nominated actor Megan Hilty reads us Carrie's essay. You may recognize her voice from her work on Broadway productions such as Wicked and Noises Off. Here's Megan Hilty reading Carrie Sandburg's essay, On the Precipice, Wings Spread.
On paper, Theo appeared to be the worst boyfriend possible. 41 to my 19, a recovering alcoholic, and father to a spirited teenage daughter who lived nearby with his ex-wife. But I didn't realize any of that when we met in the summer of 1992. At the Westchester County health food store where I was working while home from college. All I knew was that he looked like a young, fit Jeff Bridges, was a graduate student in landscape architecture at Cornell, and liked weird seaweed crackers. Butterflies flapped in my stomach every time he approached my register. One morning he commented on the Count Basie album I was playing on the store stereo, and we discovered our mutual love of big band music. The next afternoon, he walked in and handed me a mixtape. That Friday, we went on our first date. Over sushi, which I was too embarrassed to admit I'd never had before, I learned all about his age, his daughter, his drink and drug-filled past. The only other alcoholic I knew was my father, a violent, watery-eyed creature who'd never been sober for 12 consecutive days, let alone 12 years. This handsome man sipping green tea seemed to belong to an entirely different species. And unlike my fragile, bipolar first boyfriend, he radiated physical and mental health. After dinner, sitting behind the wheel of his ancient Volvo in the sushi bar parking lot, Theo took a deep breath and turned to me. He began. Assuming he was going to say something benign like, I had a nice time, I cut to the chase and kissed him. When he kissed me back, I felt weak knees and a flash of recognition. Yes, this is it. We spent the next few evenings talking in restaurants and then making out in Theo's car. I liked the way it was progressing, with a kind of passionate restraint. He seemed to be holding back because of my age, so all we did was talk and kiss. One night, when I made a move to do more, he stopped me and finished the sentence that I had interrupted at the end of our first date. I need to tell you something, he said. I'm HIV positive. While I sat beside him in stunned silence, he described testing positive 4 years earlier in 1988 and how doctors had given him no chance of long-term survival. But he was sure he'd been infected all the way back in 1980 by a needle shared with a friend who had since died of AIDS. If so, Theo had carried the virus for 12 years and, according to recent blood work, his immune system still showed no signs of damage. Nobody knew if it was due to his sobriety, his healthy diet, a genetic quirk, or just dumb luck. In AA, they say, act as if, he told me. If you don't have faith, act as if you do until you get it. So I've decided to act as if I have a future. That's why I enrolled in graduate school, planned a long-term career, and it seems to be working, you know? He paused, but I felt too dizzy to answer. I never should have asked you out, he said, his voice thick with emotion. And I'm sorry I didn't tell you sooner. I meant to, but I've been enjoying your company so much that I kept chickening out. I won't blame you if you never want to talk to me again. Again, he paused for me to respond, and this time I knew what to do. I put my arms around him and found his mouth in the dark and kissed it. I thought briefly about tears and saliva and didn't care. I wasn't afraid, and I wasn't angry. I'd chickened out plenty of times too, but tonight wouldn't be one of them. Tonight, I had been asked to believe the unbelievable, to make a leap of faith, and I did. Six weeks later, I went back to school in Amherst, Massachusetts. Theo returned to Cornell, and together we discovered that phone sex was not only safe, but surprisingly fun. My friends thought I was crazy. My mother threatened to cut me out of her will if our relationship continued. Theo and I talked about their reactions and everything else during marathon phone conversations that sometimes lasted until dawn. After graduation, we lived for a few years in Ithaca, New York, then spent several more on the road in a 1973 Winnebago Brave. We tried to balance planning our future with enjoying the present. Even though Theo appeared to fit into the lucky new long-term non-progressor category, his HIV status taught us to savor each day because you never know how many you'll have. We did our best to maintain that balance sexually, too, creating a repertory that was spontaneous without being reckless, careful but not fearful. According to a guy on the Centers for Disease Control hotline, our brand of lesbian-inspired lovemaking posed a slight risk of transmission, but I also had a slight risk of dying from just about anything. What was I supposed to do, never leave the house? None of this made any sense to my mother, who stayed up nights worrying and doing deep breathing exercises to calm herself. "Can't you just find another guy?" she asked in despair. "Any other guy?" This from the woman who had married my father, a man who looked great on paper and turned into a monster after they wed and continued making her miserable years after their divorce. Her experience had taught me that it's a risk to love anyone. 6 years after we met, Theo and I were married under a banyan tree in Key West. Then we sold the Winnebago and moved into a nice apartment in Chicago where Theo had a job with a prestigious landscape architecture firm. We settled down. And that, ironically, was nearly the end of us. Not HIV, not our 22-year age difference or my mother's steadfast opposition, not Theo's alcoholism or my scars from growing up with an alcoholic father, not sex or money or the difficult process of deciding we shouldn't have children, given all the complications. No, what nearly undid us is that we became a normal couple. After so many years of continued good health, Theo's HIV, our ticking time bomb, our reminder to live and love to the fullest, receded in our consciousness. The virus started sounding less like a ticking bomb and more like the old-fashioned clock on our nightstand, lulling us to sleep. Like so many couples, we began to take each other for granted. We drifted apart. Theo obsessed over his work. I spent too much time online, and we didn't fall out of love, but we did start to sleepwalk through our lives, snoring away in our comfortable rut. We woke up when Theo became sick. Maybe it was the stress of his high-pressure job that weakened his immune system, or maybe the disease had just finally started to progress as we slumbered, forgetting to monitor his blood. Whatever the case, in the summer of 2001, Theo was in a hospital bed in Evanston, Illinois, dying from AIDS-related pneumonia. Keeping vigil at his bedside, I lost weight, sprouted cold sores, and wondered if I might be HIV positive too. I couldn't remember the last time I'd been tested, but as Theo's fever spiked so high that he murmured about seeing angels, I didn't have time to worry about myself. My husband was dying. I had never been more exhausted, yet more fully awake in my life. High doses of antibiotics fought off the pneumonia, and a cocktail of drugs later restored him to health. It's been 9 years since then. I remain uninfected. We're back to our usual lives. Some days I don't even remember Theo is HIV positive until after dinner, when he swallows his handful of confetti-colored pills. And even then, I don't always stop to give thanks to the good people who developed these drugs, or to remind myself to appreciate each day I have with the man I love. We've been together 18 years now, and I'm pretty sure that if we've come this far, we're gonna make it until death do us part, whenever that may be. We've supported each other through so much already. The heartbreaking death of Theo's daughter at 30 because of leukemia, through sick parents and injured dogs and running a business together during an economic crisis, and moving back to Westchester and sharing a house with my mother who, God bless her, has finally accepted that Theo is a good man and not her worst nightmare. What worries me most these days is complacency. Because the rattle of pills as my husband shakes them into his palm each night makes a pleasing sound, like the gentle tick of our nightstand clock. And I have to fight to stay awake.
Megan Hilty, reading Carrie Sandburg's essay, On the Precipice, Wings Spread. We'll catch up with Carrie after the break.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. To understand changes in migration, I traveled to the Darien Gap. Thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the border of Colombia and Panama in the hopes of making it to the United States. We interviewed hundreds of people to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
This is Modern Love. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Back in 2010, when this essay was published, Carrie Sandburg was excited but also a bit worried about outing Theo as HIV positive. But in the end, there was something even more serious to think about.
I woke up one morning, felt a lump. At 37 years old, I hadn't been getting mammograms yet, so I went in right away, had it checked out, and was basically diagnosed the same day.
Carrie had breast cancer, and the aggressive tumors had already spread into her lymph nodes.
I was so used to being the person that was strong and other people relied on when they were going through medical crisis that I told Theo, "Don't come with me, no big deal, I'll go to the doctor, get checked out. If I need you, I'll call you." But I was on my way from the doctor's office downstairs to radiology to get the mammogram, and Theo was on his way up the stairs. He had left work to come and be with me, just having the feeling that this was going to be bad, which it was.
Doctors immediately started Carrie on chemotherapy. They needed to shrink the tumors before doing surgery.
It was a whirlwind, and I spent that weekend that the piece came out basically on the couch with a bucket, hoping my anti-nausea meds would see me through, because I had just started chemo, and I was completely uncertain as to what the future held for me.
Carrie and Theo's relationship was about to experience a revolution of sorts, a complete role reversal.
This time, it was Theo coming with me to doctor's appointments and holding my hand through treatment and sleeping in the chair at my hospital bedside while I had surgery. And it was very hard for him, but he wanted to do it because we have each other's back. That's what we do. And it was hard for me to accept his help, but I did because that's what we do. And he was amazing through it. And he and my mom kind of bonded in a way that they hadn't before.
It's been 6 years since Carrie's diagnosis. She and Theo have moved to rural Maine, and their dream of living off the land is now a reality. They run a small landscape business and enjoy fixing up their old New England farmhouse. But Carrie and Theo still go back to New York every 4 months for checkups.
Because it was a really aggressive strain, and the chances of it coming back are pretty good. Ironically, Theo's healthier than I am right now. My immune system didn't really bounce back after chemo, so I'm still immunosuppressed. While he's perfect health, takes his meds, really strong, he's doing great. And one thing that's funny is that I had to have my ovaries removed as part of my treatment. So I was basically thrown into surgical menopause at 37 and aged 20 years overnight, hormonally, physiologically. So Theo's 65 now, I'm 44, and we're kind of growing old together in this strange way. We're kind of getting to experience some of these things together, which we never could have anticipated, having the age difference. And we've been together for 25 years now. This summer will be the 25th anniversary of our first date, and I never could imagine we would have this much time together.
Carrie Sandberg. She and her husband Theo live on the Maine coast and run Red Twig Landscape. Carrie recently finished a memoir and has begun work on a novel. After the break, Modern Love editor Daniel Jones, plus Megan Hilty on what she shares with Carrie Sandberg.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. To understand changes in migration, I traveled to the Darien Gap. Thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the border of Colombia and Panama in the hopes of making it to the United States. We interviewed hundreds of people to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times.
I get so many stories of people who are looking for love and have this firm idea, you know, sometimes sort of scarily firm idea of what that person, who that person is going to be, and what kind of person they're going to fall in love with. And so often that's not who you fall in love with, you know, and sometimes it's even the opposite of that person that you have in mind. And in Carrie's story, you know, this is very much just love when it just happens. She meets somebody and they have a connection and everything fights against that. So I love how she goes into this with an open heart and how, you know, this is love at its most vulnerable.
Dan Jones, editor of Modern Love for the New York Times. You can read more of his ruminations on love in his book, Love Illuminated, exploring life's most mystifying subject with the help of 50,000 strangers. Thanks again to Megan Hilty for reading this week's essay. She says this piece really touched a nerve.
What really struck me, honestly, is the idea of being afraid of being a normal couple or complacency or falling into a rut. You know, as someone who is married and has been married for several years now, I completely worry about the same things. And I think that's a pretty universal feeling. And I think it was just captured beautifully in this story.
Megan Hilty is a Tony-nominated actor known for her role on the television series Smash. She's released 3 albums, most recently A Merry Little Christmas, this past December. She'll be on tour throughout 2017. Next week on Modern Love, Selma star David Oyelowo. He shares a man's story of blindness and marriage.
Just think about the inevitable disconnection. She smiles, and unless I'm told to smile back, I don't. I can't gaze at her nor look into her eyes.
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Perotti, and Amory Sievertson. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.